two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, are you ready to add a sprinkle of joy to your day? Then you need to check out Add to Cart. Hi, I'm Sujan Pak.
And I'm Kulap Vilaysack. We're your hosts, and on this show, we talk about the things we buy, the things we buy into, and what it says about who we are.
That's right. Each week, we're going to have some honest and maybe, you know, a little TMI conversations about all the fabulous, weird, wonderful things we're adding to or ditching from our carts. You know, we talk about beauty products, latest health trends, philosophies we're passionate about. Nothing is off limits on this podcast.
We're diving deep into everything we and our guests buy into and exploring what it reveals about who we truly are. We're going to decide what's worth the investment, be it money or emotions.
Add to Cart from Lemonada Media has new episodes out on Tuesdays, wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
Welcome to The Bubble. It is June 1st, and this is Andy Slavitt, your host. Hope you had a nice Memorial Day holiday. We went to see our oldest son, Caleb, have his 2020 graduation from college. Imagine that, like 2 years later, mom and dad finally get to see him walk across the aisle. And he got to see his friends, which was neat because he and his friends basically never, most of them never got a chance to say goodbye to one another, because if you recall back in 2020, in the spring, it was right around spring break time, and kids were kind of all over the map, and many of them didn't come back. So, good for him, good for us. I hope you got to do some meaningful family time over Memorial Day. And we're back, and it's June, and we got a lot of stuff to process. We're going to process it today with my friend Al Franken. And one of the things that I want to explore with Al here, which is we got a lot going on in this country, and we don't feel very good about our government putting up laws that support and respond to us. Whether your issue is school choice, whether your issue is just some common sense gun regulation, if you are believing in those things, more universal health care, I'd probably add to the list. Paid family medical leave, I'd add to the list. Then you are in the majority, at least according to polls. And in the case of common sense gun laws, you're in the vast majority, 90%+. Yet, you would ask yourself, how could we be in the majority and not have the laws that reflect the will of the majority if this is supposed to be a representative democracy? And the answer, as I explore with Al, particularly as the Senate is constructed and as Supreme Court justices are picked out of the Senate or ratified out of the Senate, and an electoral college that picks a president, is we may not have a representative democracy that we think we do. We have a republic. We have a set of rules that govern this republic. But I really wanted to get into with Al today was when he was in the U.S. Senate, and you had an event like Sandy Hook, and you had the will of the people so clearly expressed, why couldn't we get anything done? Why are we prevented from being able to essentially support the needs of the country as the country evolves? You know, guns were one thing when the Second Amendment was written in the 18th century. Guns are quite a different thing today, and we've got to be able to react to the times, and yet we're not. So there's a lot of things causing us to think about this question about our democracy and how badly we want it. the midterms, which we've talked about on this show, the January 6th insurrection and those hearings, which we've talked about on this show, the Supreme Court, which I think, as you'll hear from Al today, the majority of which was appointed by a president that didn't get the popular majority in the country, and a Senate, which comes from, as we know, equal portions with states who have small populations and those which have big populations. And as a result, you get a set of factors here which would cause us to say, oh, these are stumbling blocks. Yet on top of that, that the people who then make the laws want to stay in power and put up laws that make it harder to vote. Those are challenges as well. It's a good conversation with Al. We're good friends. He's here live, which is kind of interesting and fun. He gets a bit emotional. It's an emotional set of topics. That's okay. You know, I think he is feeling it pretty hard, particularly watching the shooting, being in the Congress during the Connecticut shooting, having small grandchildren, four of them. And by the way, if you are in the East Coast on Friday, June 3rd, go to Red Bank, New Jersey. He's going to be appearing there at a place called the Count Basie Theater at 8 p.m. Get your tickets. Lana and I just saw him recently in Santa Barbara when he was out here appearing. We saw the show. It's a treat. It's really good. So, again, if you're in the East Coast, it's called the Count Basie Theater in Red Bank, New Jersey. All right. Let's let Al walk in the door. At the great pleasure of having my friend and former senator, my own former senator, Al Franken, here live and in person in Slavitt Studios.
Yeah, and beautiful deck city is what I like. You have a beautiful home, but mainly decks.
I think in California, you spend your time outdoors, I hear.
In Minnesota, people have decks, but not this much decks, because it's really cold for a lot of the year in Minnesota.
But
decks make a lot of sense. A lot of sense.
We're both Minnesotans, kind of not there now, but we're both Minnesotans.
Yeah, and we do spend time on decks.
last time you were on this show, and I've been on, by the way, Al, if you don't know him, is also a famous podcaster, and I've had the pleasure of being on your show a few times.
Yeah, I think you're, if not the most frequent guest, at least in the top two or three, or Dahlia Lithwick is quite a...
She's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great program. I'm sure everybody listens to our podcast, also listens to yours, you promised not to eat during my podcast, which I appreciate.
But you ate.
I ate on your podcast.
And I told you not to, but then I caught you.
No, you explicitly told me not to eat on your podcast.
I explicitly told you not to, and yet you did.
Well,
but it was very tasty cream cheese with some kind of salmon sweet.
Candied salmon. Candied salmon, which is addicting in my defense. And I want to get into what you're up to now. But it's impossible not to start with the events of last week. The shooting in Uvalde, Texas, which is hard to talk about.
It's now, as we're recording this, a day ago.
Yeah.
It's one day old. And, when I'm out here in California with my daughter, and she has two kids... And just being with a parent of little kids whose kids were in elementary school, it was the expression on my daughter's face. And, it brought me back to Sandy Hook, obviously. And I was in the Senate. It was 2012. Ted Cruz was elected in November of 2012. And about a month later, Sandy Hook happened. That was 20 kids. Five adults. And, of course, I didn't see Ted till he was sworn in on January 3rd. And the first thing he said to me, he didn't introduce himself. He came up to me and he said, anybody who's for the assault weapons ban, and I was a co-sponsor of the assault weapons ban, anyone who's for the assault weapons ban is engaged in sophistry.
Sophistry.
Sophistry, SAT word.
Mm-hmm.
which means knowingly deceiving with a fallacious argument. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, Ted, how am I engaged in sophistry? He said, well, Clinton's own Justice Department did a study on the assault weapons ban and concluded that it didn't work. And I said, you know what? No, it didn't. You're talking about the 96 Clinton Justice Department study. And what it said was it actually looked like it did work. Gun violence went down like 6% in 95, but it was only, the law was passed in 94, and it said there just wasn't enough data to draw any kind of statistically valid conclusion. And then he got mad. He said, well, you just read the report. And I had. Mm-hmm. But I went back to my office and got my judiciary counsel. I told him what Ted had said. He went, no. I said, I know. I said, go get the relevant language from the report, put it on a one sheet. I'll carry it around. And next time I see Ted, mm-hmm. I'll show him the language. Mm-hmm. So the next day, I go to the floor, and I say, a little bit across the room, I go, oh, Ted. Remember Jack Benny? I was a big Jack Benny fan. Right. Oh, Ted.
Yeah.
And he kind of comes over to me. I said, yesterday you came up to me and said that anybody who's for the assault weapons ban is engaged in sophistry. And he said, no, I didn't. And that's pretty much everything you have to know about Ted Cruz. And yet, in our hearings, he actually brought that up. That study up and said and framed it exactly the same way.
Describe what the mood of the Senate was after Sandy Hook and what you felt was possible or likely to happen and what was going on amongst the senators.
I guess I was naive.
We all were.
I assumed that we would pass something significant. I felt like an assault weapons ban. At least going into the hearings, I saw every Republican was against it. I remember Ted also holding up a thing. I don't know what you call the arm of a assault weapon that, you know, and he said, this is just a piece of plastic. Why is this such important? Well, it allows you to hold it in such a way that you can murder more people.
Right.
I was furious. I couldn't understand why we couldn't put a maximum on the number of bolts in a clip. I couldn't understand that. I couldn't understand why background checks, Manchin Toomey. I couldn't believe that didn't pass.
Not to get too graphic, but I think it's important. They can't identify these kids because of what the bullets shot in such rapid succession in the same place do to these kids. These kids in Newtown were missing whole limbs, and their faces were unidentifiable. All they had to identify with their parents by DNA.
yeah, this... basically, the history of this is in 94, the Senate passed, and then the Congress passed an assault weapons ban. It was a 10-year ban. And then in 2004... it wasn't extended. And because it wasn't extended, the gun manufacturers just went nuts. And the whole gun industry started becoming about, let's make these more lethal. Mm-hmm. Let's design these. I think what the kid used in Sandy Hook was a Bushmaster. And it was made for killing people in close quarters. That was the purpose of it. No, I meant, sorry, Jesus, I'm so sorry. I met with the families. I don't understand people like Ted Cruz. I don't understand these people. And it's, you know, during the hearing, it's like Lindsey Graham. I like Lindsey.
he would like paint this picture of like, you know, a housewife having to fend her house against the salt. Like, I remember turning to my judiciary counsel and saying, like, okay, I'm going to say something. Don't laugh. The only way I can envision what Lindsay is describing right now is a zombie apocalypse. That's what he's describing. And this, nothing's going to happen, right? Nothing's going
to
happen.
Well, these events sync to me a little bit with January 6th, Al, because this fantasy of this armed insurrection to overthrow the government or defend yourself against the government, which you heard from years of why people need to bear arms.
Yeah. Well, they're going to do it. They know how to do it anyway by suppressing votes and then picking secretaries of state and attorneys general. They don't need to do an armed insurrection, so maybe we should just let them know that.
In some good news, Trump's Georgia Secretary of State candidate didn't win. The one that was...
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Raffensperger. Just think about it. The people of Georgia, the Republicans in Georgia, at least people who voted in the Republican primary, said, huh, let me see. So he was honest. What do you think? I think you've heard me say this, is that when Trump said, I just need you to find 11,780 votes, one more than I lost by, did he think Raffensperger was actually going to do that press conference? Was Raffensperger going to go up, I'm Brad Raffensperger, Secretary of State of Georgia, and the election has been changed, and the the winner by one vote is Donald Trump. I mean, Trump, I guess, thought if he threatened them or something, they would do that.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Welcome to The Dough, where cash is queen and we hardly know her, but we're still here figuring her out together because, y'all, Season 2 is here. Hosted every week by me, X-Maya. Remember me? I'm going to be talking to all types of people about their relationship to money. I'm talking to reality stars, entrepreneurs, financial experts, and even some of my own friends. Basically, anyone who will get real with me about their dollars, how they make money, how they spend it, and how they save it, because I'm trying to retire early, people. Season 2 of The Dough is out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
No, look, the reason I ask about the Senate, Al, is because, at least as it relates to this issue, and I think we have plenty of other stuff to talk about, that hopefully some of it will be less emotional. Maybe some of it will even be funny. But people feel like the least represented part of our government, kind of the link where you say the vast majority of the country believes in at least some level of choice for a woman. The vast majority of the country believes there ought to be limits, even if we support the Second Amendment, to people's ability to access guns, what those guns look like, how those guns operate, who should be able to get access to them. Just like with a car and alcohol and everything else, cigarettes, everything else is regulated. The vast majority of the country, left and right, I think, believes those things. And on a period of time when you've got a majority in the House of Representatives that feels that way and a president that feels that way, it is this inability for the Senate to represent what Americans are feeling. At least that's one element of this.
You can
wonder
how
you reflect on that.
You can argue that we don't have a representative democracy in this country. The 6-3 court made that decision.
And how many, this was on your show, how many of the people in that majority were appointed by a president that wasn't elected by a majority of the country?
If I'm correct, it's 5.
That's right.
Now, to be fair, 2 of them were nominated and by W. After the election, he did win by popular vote, but he did get in the first time, not winning the popular vote. So the Electoral College and Trump, of course, lost by 3 million votes.
Right.
The first time, then by right. 7 million, except he won Georgia by 1 vote, I believe.
And you could argue the court picked itself when it chose to stop the Gore v. Bush.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
Yes. And Merrick Garland, which was unprecedented and was complete, if I may say so, and the reasoning they were getting, I was on judiciary then, mm-hmm. and I don't know if your listeners remember this, but I sure do, and mm-hmm. I'm sure you do. It was the Biden rule. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
And McConnell kept saying, well, it's the Biden rule. He gave a speech, and he said that if there's an election, presidential election that year, well, then you can't confirm a justice. It was in speech, you know. And it wasn't. If you pull the line out of the speech, but in the speech, Biden said, and this was in June mm-hmm. of 88, he said, if someone retires and the president, without consulting us, mm-hmm. nominates a conservative, we won't take him up because... Remember, this would be someone voluntarily retiring right. to be replaced, an older guy, you know, an older Republican mm-hmm. or conservative being replaced by
a younger one.
But if he nominates a moderate
mm-hmm.
or if he consults with us, then we will take him up. Now, that was part of the speech. And I read those in our meetings.
Mm.
The Biden rule wasn't, there was no Biden rule.
Right.
And then Lindsey gets up in this one of those same meetings and said, you hold my words against me. If a Republican is president 4 years from now and a vacancy comes up, we will not take him up. We won't take him up.
And then what happened?
Ginsburg dies in late September. Coney Barrett, she's sworn in, I think, 8 days.
Yep.
Before the election.
Yeah.
The Senate isn't Democratic.
Right.
The 50 Republican senators represent 45% of the population.
Well, look, this goes to another point, which I think people would say, I don't know, rightly or wrongly, that the Republicans fight unfairly and win, and the Democrats don't or aren't as effective at it. But I want to get someplace else first, just in the structure of the U.S. Senate. There's some constitutional theory that the Senate's supposed to break the passions of the populace. Yeah,
that's right. We're the teacup, or the saucer. We're the saucer, and the House is the cup.
Right, which is an analogy that probably no one gets anymore because no one uses teacups and saucers.
Yeah, but like if you had a coffee cup and a saucer under that, it'd be the same.
Yeah.
Let me explain. They're both hot liquids, and, yes. and they don't have to be, but then it'd mm-hmm. probably be in a glass.
Right.
I'm over-explaining. The point is, it was a compromise. So they right. gave every state 2 senators, and it was for the smaller states, got to have 2 senators. That's the only way you get the Constitution ratified, and that's what it was, and that's what it is, and that's the way it's going to be.
But I think America sits here today, and unlike the events 10 years ago, where you described yourself and all the rest of us were right there with it as to some degree believing that this was such a horrific occurrence that if anything was going to change things, that was the opportunity and that it was going to happen. Today, I think what feels even worse about this is it's just as awful, but it's also now just as expected. And nothing is expected out of the U.S. Senate or state houses or governors, because there is this sense that for whatever reason, the will being the will of the majority of the country for over a decade now. We're not talking about a whim that just happens on one poll, but being the consistent will of the country. For 90% of people who support background checks and who support red flag laws, doesn't stand a chance in a place like the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, and then the opponent says, well, that's not going to stop everyone. No, of course not.
But doing absolutely nothing is not the only alternative to stopping everyone, is it?
No. And I do believe that I understand that maybe Tester and Manchin are trying to work with a couple of Republicans to find something. And I think that's better than – I hope we don't put a messaging bill out there knowing that it'll go down. I'm sick of that. I am.
So you don't recommend forcing a vote on something we know is not going to pass. You think there's potential – and Collins apparently and Romney apparently are – open to conversation, whatever that means. How do you read between those lines? Do you think there's really a potential for bipartisan dialogue?
You have to hope so. You need 60. And you just have to, Murkowski maybe, and, the usual suspects, Romney.
And what's his name for Pennsylvania again?
Toomey. Yeah. That was a shock when that didn't happen. But background checks, and then, there'll be people, again, they'll say, well, that's not a cure everything. People are going to say, yeah. But let's stop as many as we possibly can. And so at least we're making an attempt to stop this this carnage. Those little kids. Yes, I hope we don't do a messaging bill.
People love to pretend that there are simple formulas for living your best life now. Eat this and you won't get sick. Manifest it and everything will work out. But there are some things you can choose and some things you can't. And it's okay that life isn't always getting better. I'm Kate Bowler, and on Everything Happens, I speak with kind, smart, funny people about life as it really is. Beautiful, terrible, and everything in between. Let's be human together. Everything Happens is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Can't get enough of your favorite Lemonada Media podcasts? By subscribing to Lemonada Premium today, you'll gain access to fun and inspiring bonus content from all of our podcasts across the Lemonada Media Network. As a subscriber, you can listen to never-before-heard interview excerpts between Julia Louis-Dreyfus and her A-plus guests on Wiser Than Me, laugh along with Elise Myers as she and her guests play a rapid-fire questions game on Funny 'Cause It's True, and continue to uncover new ways to make life suck less through our exclusive subscriber audio. Check out a free trial of Lemonada Premium today in the Apple Podcast app by clicking on our podcast logo and then the subscribe button.
So let's flash around to another topic that's near and dear to your heart. Roughly 2 years ago, George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis by a police officer. In a video that we've all seen multiple times. It's obviously a community that's your home.
Yeah.
It's a community that we lived in for 17 years. And if you could reflect back now 2 years on that event, what's happened since, what you think has changed, what it's done to Minnesota?
Well, I think if you asked people around the country about Minneapolis before this happened, you'd say, oh, well, that's one of the most progressive cities in the country. Minnesota is one of the most progressive states, and in many ways it is. But the disparities in the state are among the worst in the country.
Educational. criminal justice, health-wise.
And home ownership. Economics. In some ways, it's because the white population does extremely well in education. And there are all these Fortune 500 companies there. And but like the rest of the country, after World War II, when GIs came home with the GI Bill, black soldiers couldn't buy homes because they were redlined. The neighborhoods didn't have the kind of transportation that white neighborhoods had. They built I-94 right through Frogtown, dividing up black neighborhoods. All this stuff that's happened all over the country. Our police force in both Minneapolis and St. Paul don't have very good records at all. This was a cop who felt that he could get away with killing someone on camera because he was black. I don't remember the name of the book. I want to have the authors on. Washington Post journalists who've written a book about George Floyd's life. And it is a book about systemic racism in this country. And it exists. It's there. And for us to...
You can't say that in a textbook anymore in a lot of states, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but it's undeniable. And
I just want to put a flag on that issue because I want to come back and talk about what I see as some of this conservative backlash. But
the backlash was after George Floyd was murdered on this tape, when there were demonstrations and Black Lives Matter, people said, yeah, okay, there's systemic racism in this country. And now there's been a systematic attempt by the right to say, oh, no, Democrats teach this thing in kindergarten called critical race theory, which is just a big lie. Youngkin lied his way to being governor. There's no critical race theory taught in K through 12, and never was. I mean, he said, on the first day that I'm governor, critical race theory stops being taught in our public schools. And it's just like, okay, you ever had a Carlisle? Was he at a Carlisle?
Yeah, that's right.
You do research at Carlisle, right? I mean, they kind of do research, and I think they could have done the research and seen that critical race theory is an academic discipline that started in the 70s to respond to why hasn't there been progress since the civil rights bills passed in the 60s. It's an academic discipline. It's taught mainly, almost exclusively in law school, in some graduate school, maybe in some education schools. But my God, it's not taught in K through 12, and you guys know it. And you don't care ever about whether you tell the friggin' truth or not.
Right. Well, they've got us talking about it. I mean, they've got us talking about it. I mean, we're not talking about police reform. We're talking about their issue, critical race theory. And this leads right up to the events in Buffalo. Tucker Carlson.
Great replacement theory.
Great replacement theory.
You know, it is that we're bringing in immigrants to replace white voters. They'll be obedient to us, to Democrats. Right. And this is meant to scare the bejesus out of people, including the shooter in Buffalo.
Right. And, you know, that kind of stuff, I used to think of white nationalism. I used to think that was extremism. I used to think that was the thing that people said that it wouldn't say out loud, that maybe they believed it, but it wasn't acceptable. And you have to hunt somewhere on the dark web for it. But to turn on the most popular cable program and the most popular cable channel in the country during the most popular hour where people watch television, if a young man is able to do that, he's not following extreme thought. He's following mainstream acceptable thought. And so the step to that kind of shooting in Buffalo just got one step more acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, this is a dark period. And the fact is that over the last, I don't know, over the last several months, I've just looked at our politics, and I'm really worried. Obviously worried about the midterms. I'm a Democrat, but this is different. I mean, the Republican Party has changed to an authoritarian party, and that it's dangerous. And I'm kind of hoping that, for example, the January 6th hearings mm-hmm. will open people's eyes.
But does it?
Hopefully that'll show what this was, which was that the President of the United States was plotting to overthrow the government. I don't think a majority of Americans. I think that will mobilize people. I understand that registration in Georgia, as difficult as they've tried to make it, is way up.
Yeah. But does it feel like that picture of what you just described of the Republican Party? Why is that still appealing to so many? There's something going on in many parts of this country where that.
It's resentment. I think that Trump, his dad's a real estate developer in Queens. If you're in Queens, you hate Manhattan, mm-hmm. and you resent it. And I think he has tapped into a lot of resentment in this country. And Republicans are just trying to narrow the electorate as much as they can to those people.
Mm-hmm.
And
they have.
And, you know, Mark Elias is trying to fight this, and we're trying to fight this is why these and also you know I have a political action committee, Midwest Values Pack. We're going to be fighting to make sure that secretaries of state in states mm-hmm. like Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania are elected that are Democrats who actually believe that we should have Democratic elections and who believe that the last election was not stolen.
Mm-hmm.
You have a guy right for the, what's his name, Mastriano in Pennsylvania, who is kind of a nut.
Right.
Who is convinced the last election was stolen and wrote a, did you see the thesis he wrote in
oh,
he was in the military and very often in the military after, I don't know, 10 or 15 years in the military, you write your master's thesis, and his he wrote about 20 years ago, and basically he was saying that the military is going to have to take over at some point because liberal elites are taking over, and it's going to have to be the military. And this is who just won the nomination
right.
in the primary, like overwhelmingly, and
he's going to get a lot of votes in the general election
in Minnesota. Steve Simon, who I think, mm-hmm. I think you know, is sure. our Secretary of State. The Secretary of State, of course, administers the elections there and all these other states. The woman who won the nod of the Republican Party there, actually at the convention, showed a cartoon, an animated cartoon of George Soros operating puppet strings mm-hmm. to manipulate Mark Elias, our election lawyer. I mean, at a certain point, I've laughed and I've cried. In this. I mean, what? Really? Really? That's who you know. That was a winner, that one, was to have, the Jew billionaire is pulling the puppet strings. He's the puppet master for the Democratic election lawyer. Didn't you know that?
Well, and it's the thing is, you would think that, and from a political standpoint, running against absurdity would make your job easier. Yet it feels like this whole Steve Bannon notion of, forgive my language, you know, flood the zone with and confuse everybody in this.
We never realized like the wisdom of that. That's so smart.
I guess. But you still keep fighting, and I want to maybe close up. You need to get back to your family, and
yes.
You're out here seeing your wonderful daughter and her family, and you kind of come over.
I'm supposed to buy dinner on the way back, too.
We've got food you can take. We've got food you can take back if you'd like. Do they like Mediterranean?
I better call home.
Okay, we'll find out. But I think people would be interested. Because so many people follow you, so many people rooted for you during these judicial hearings. So many people have seen you talking sense. And I think people take, I think, a certain amount of notice of someone like you feeling despondent and hopeless or angry, sure.
Well, let's put it upset. This way. I don't feel hopeless and despondent about our future, but I'm very worried. and just going to keep fighting. And I don't want anyone listening to this to think that that's taking the fight out of me or should take the fight out of you at all. It's just the stakes are so high right now. And let's... You know, it's just appalling, though. It really is appalling.
I'll tell you, I found myself, for the time period that Paul Ryan was trying to overturn the ACA and Donald Trump became president, was trying to overturn the ACA, and other things that were going on then, I will say, and I don't talk about this a lot on this show, but I found myself fighting hard, and I felt the energy in the country moving that direction. And up until recently, I have felt like a lot of people, boy, I'm just going to turn politics off for a while because it's been distasteful. It's nothing good. It doesn't make me feel good. It's larger than life. Yep. And there's forces you can't control. Focus on the small. Focus on your life. Focus on people. Focus on things we could change. But I'll tell you, the last couple weeks have been a wake-up call for me. If I need to get re-energized about why it's important to have people like me in the arena, just as one person supporting people who are trying to put a stop to some of these very undemocratic things, some of these things that end up hurting children, some of these things that end up taking rights away from women, some of these things that make it easier for a person of color to get beat up by a cop, then me being tired is going to be part of the problem. And so I'm going to have to decide to figure out how to not be tired, because this is going to be a constant fight. And I know that if we want things to change, one thing I know for sure is you have to do something about it.
Yeah. On the other hand, there's times where you have to go like, I'm going to listen to some music. I'm going to watch some comedy. I'm going to play... Well, I'm going to do something in my community that has nothing to do with politics.
Absolutely.
I'm going to do, you know, I always tell people a six-year-old knows how to use a microwave oven, and a six-year-old can teach a four-year-old to use a microwave oven. So you can go door knock, and they'll be fine.
They'll be fine. It sounds like great advice for grandfather.
You see, the comedy helps, you see.
What gives you joy? What's making you smile in this stage of your life?
Well, I have four grandchildren now, and you know,
you like them.
I like three of them. No, I love my grandchildren. What I actually like here now, because I've been living in New York mainly. I live in Minnesota, New York, and L.A., but mainly in New York, where I have a six-year-old and a three-year-old. And here I have a one that's turning nine. That's why we're here this week. One's having his ninth birthday and one who is five. And they, in the morning, they get up a little earlier than me, and they jump in the bed. They jump on top of me in bed and just lay on top of me. That's all they do. And I just can't believe what an amazing, that just is the greatest joy I have, is that physical. And I'm worried. He's turning nine. I'm thinking like,
he's going to hurt you soon.
He's going to be 13. He's not going to cuddle.
Do you still sing to him?
I do. I sing a lot of Grateful Dead.
Well, look, pretty soon he's going to jump on you and break your back, so I think he's going to be wise.
Actually, the nine-year-old doesn't do that, or about to be nine. The six-year-old does aggressively try to hurt me. That's his sister.
Well, go spend time with them.
I will.
And we'll bring him back some food.
Aye, aye, sir.
Friday conversation coming up. I think is a can't miss. It was actually, I will say, having just gotten through it, one of the best conversations I think I've had in a long, long time with two amazing people. You know, the objective was to talk about the economy and financial crisis and things going on with gas prices and things like that. But it got really deep and far-reaching and emotional, and the kind of conversation I like, where it was really, really challenging, but also I think really, really helpful. There's a lot of complex factors going around the globe, which are impacting our 401ks and our ability to buy things at the grocery store and so forth. But a lot of the conversation ended up being about the values that are reflected in how you think about money, with just really terrific conversation. That's Friday. Next week, General Gustav Perna. We got many other good shows coming up. I think you'll enjoy them, and I hope you enjoy the next couple days and tune into our conversation on Friday. Thank you for listening to In the Bubble. We're a production of Lemonada Media. Catherine Barnes, Jackie Harris, and Kyle Sheely produce our show, and they're great. Our mix is by Noah Smith and James Barber, and they're great too. Steve Nelson is the Vice President of Weekly Content, and he's okay too. And of course, the ultimate bosses, Jessica Cordova Kramer and Stephanie Whittleswax, they executive produced the show, and we love them dearly. Our theme was composed by Dan Malad and Oliver Hill, with additional music by Ivan Kuriev. You can find out more about our show on social media at Lemonada Media, where you can also get a transcript of the show, and you can find me at Ace Lavitt on Twitter. If you like what you heard today, why don't you tell your friends to listen as well and get them to write a review? Thanks so much. Talk to you next time.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere, and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people, and we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Paul F. Tompkins.
I'm Lauren Lapkus.
I'm Scott Aukerman, and together we make up the show Threedom! Threedom is a show where the three of us, who are comedians and also friends, we all just hang out, we tell stories about each other, and about ourselves, usually.
We're constantly telling stories about each other.
You got it, Paul did.
And we play games, and we laugh a lot. It's just that simple. It's a really easy podcast.
This is a pretty good representation of the show.
It's actually exactly what it is, plus singing.
So listen to it now. The new season's out. Get it wherever you get your podcasts.
Just go outside and scream, Threedom!
Just like we do.
Threedom!